All right, what's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us today for episode number one, the initial episode of the Heavy Galaxy Show right here on the CMS Network at CMSPN.com. My name is Matt Hartnett, and here with me is the other half of the show, the Heavy Rock Mayor of the Las Vegas Strip from Vegas Rock Revolution and the Doomed and Stone Show, Mr. John Gist, who just happens to be celebrating his birthday today. 39 years old today, right, John? 39?
It is birthday time, and you got to celebrate it, because just having one's a victory, really. That means you made it another year.
I agree.
And if you want to make it another year, that's good news. It's like a win.
Absolutely.
Well, anything 54 going 54 today, man.
54. All right, 54 years young and strong, and man, that's and still rocking out there, doing what you do, man. We're gonna, before we get into things, I definitely want to talk about. Just let the listeners know and the viewers know, really, I mean, who we are. I mean, obviously, some watching this will know me. A lot will know, of course, you, but not know myself or you. So first thing I want to do is talk about, like I said, who we are. Why don't you go ahead and tell everyone, John, what you do. Obviously, I just mentioned Vegas Rock Revolution, Doomed and Stone Show. You do a whole lot for the music business, man. Heavy rock scene specifically. Go ahead and let everyone know what your expertise are in the
You got it all covered already. No, I'm joking.
No, you got more than that.
I can't go in to talking too much about myself. You can ask questions along the way, but I started Vegas Rock Revolution I think going on 6 years at least when I started going to shows and there was no one at shows hardly. Like I saw Spirit Caravan, Elder, and Monster Generator with about 20 people.
Wow.
That was a good lineup six, seven years ago. And now it's like a dream lineup. But I just looked around and just gotten divorced, quit a high paying job. And it's just like, man, I think I could do better than that. I mean, it was that simple. I just saw shows and saw they weren't advertising at all. Flyers, posters weren't. I mean, there was nothing much of anything going on. People just thought they'd book a show and people either show or they don't. And so I've been in marketing, marketing, sales, advertising, mainly marketing since like 93. So It just felt natural to just try to make some things happen and just start bringing in cool concerts, put together some cool ones. Then I got hit up once in a while by tour packages and early bands were like Void Vader, House of Broken Promises with Arthur C. Nice. Who was in UNITA.
Great band.
Salem's band, Avon, which has Alfredo Hernandez from Pious and Queens of Stone Age. Had them early on, and the Rare Breed. And then soon after that was Sasquatch. Sasquatch, Truck Fighters, Mothership, and House of Broken Promises in the same night. That's what I was throwing in the fire. Yeah. I got forced to take – I already had Sasquatch set in House of Broken Promises. And on with Truck Fighters, I get hit up about these guys with Mothership. Jeez. The same night. They're like, we're going to book somewhere else. I'm like, no. I know enough to know that's fucking disaster. And, truth be told, I kind of got – I got bent over on how much I spent on the show. It's probably the music, man. People are like, well, you got the band's going to get paid. I'm like, there's literally not sometimes enough revenue to pay what they think they're supposed to get paid in this region or this market. So you have to know your own market. So anyways, that was an unbelievably fun night. But yeah, I lost some money. I had like Low Pan one night as well and some other cool bands. And, just got into it. Then I'd start doing some radio shows here or there. It was pretty fun. Some of them, like one of them, the owner of the show was just did not like me. And so it just got sucked after a while, They're just like, dude, why are you so fucking bitter? God, just kidding. Some people just happens that way, and you get treated like shit and you're like, all right, here I go. And, did Planet Desert Rock and all that good stuff. I've done three now. Just finished up my third one, which was actually fantastic. Garcia and Nebula each headlining a night. It was a festival where everyone – I call it a weekend or not a festival. And everyone had a great time, and the bands made money. I made some money for the first time. Like the amount of money I lost in the second one, Matt.
Not good.
It haunts me to this day.
Oh man.
I couldn't control myself on the spending, you know, and just kept giving and giving and giving. And tens of thousands, you know, just
you go back
and you look at your business credit card and you're like, fuck.
Oof.
Yeah. I didn't have that to live.
Oof. Yeah. That's so anyway.
We learn as we go. And I just have a massive belief in what music is out there right now coming out of this branch of heavy rock.
Yeah.
And I believe in two branches of heavy rock. There's the heavy rock that is basically formed and branded by Sirius XM Radio, where I watched them go from like 2010, 2011, where they had some normal good rocking bands, like more in the vein of straightforward, you know, hard, heavy rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it just switched to like this very highly produced, probably can never do live without some help.
You talk about Octane now, right? Pretty much.
What's that?
You're talking about on Sirius XM Octane?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. On Sirius XM Octane.
Yeah.
And it's just, they've literally created a brand.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah.
And so, but I look at it, that family tree lineage, and I feel it's more in line with the new metal side, which is the polar opposite of the heavy rock scene that has been kept down in the United States, like low. Like, it's like, holy shit. How can we scratch it and go, what? There hasn't been a good rock and roll band in the last 10 years until Greta Van Fleet?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
There's much and more then, than that. You know, yeah.
I followed Rival Sons from the very beginning.
Okay.
And literally, they're the best rock band for 12-something years, and they couldn't even barely sniff the radio. But yet, their songs that are from the first couple albums, I mean, Pressure and Time, which is now on a commercial, those songs are as good or better than anything they made the last couple albums under a big label. Mm-hmm. And it just further goes to prove it's no longer that the labels, we trust them, and they're the great arbiters of, they look through all the stuff for us so that we don't have to burden ourselves, and they'll just service the tunes. Here you are. We're the fucking man, you know, which is coming down to now three big labels. They've literally condensed down to three big labels. A lot of the big labels, you know, like Atlantic are not.
No,
they're now underneath another label.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I forgot why I'm on this fucking tangent, but anyways, heavy rock, you know, with the roots of Sabbath, the Led Zeppelin, the Hendrix, the Thin Lizzy, you know, to Blue Oyster Cult, to Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, you know, Queen Stone Age, Caius, shit, Robin Trower. I mean, guitar bass rock that comes from the blues bass side of the rock family tree.
Yep.
And that blues bass side, you know, literally is the foundation of everything.
Everything. So, oh, yeah.
Can't get more American than blues bass rock as well, is that comes from African American blues. So it's evolved. We've, you know, as a country, have been a big part of this, obviously, from the roots to later. And in England, it made it their own. And that's where we look at Zeppelin and Sabbath to go, holy shit, the electrification and the modification and this growth. And everything has been different ever since.
Yeah. No, it really has been. That's one of the things that we've been, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit about why we're doing this show to begin with, you know, what the mission is and our goal with doing and that is. And obviously, as you just kind of, you know, just referred to me, the fact that, you know, especially here in the United States, I mean, heavy rock's been sort of, cast aside for years. I mean, the good thing is, like you said, there's been such a huge heavy and hard rock scene that's been around for a while. But like you said, no one's given, not many people. I mean, you know how it is, man. Like you said, radio rock, you're not going to hear any of it, right?
Gatekeepers, you know? Matt. It's not, people don't know this fucking music exists. I mean,
I know.
Literally, absolutely, listen, folks. Yeah. My name is John. I'm a rockaholic. And I get an Uber to go to the shows, which I go to 2 to 3 shows a week minimum, live minimum, shows. Man. Sometimes by myself. Mm-hmm. I don't give a fuck. It's me and the band sometimes, just, you know. And I get the Uber driver at 85% of the time, and I convince them, let me put some music on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what they look like. I don't care what race. They could be black. They could be an old white woman. It could be a fucking nun. No, I'm joking. I haven't had a nun. I had a Hello Kitty car. But
yeah, you told me about that. Like, yeah.
I didn't know I was going to get picked up in a Hello Kitty car, first off. Mm-hmm. But I took it as a challenge. I took it easy on her. It's not like I played Sasquatch, you know.
Sure.
You know, playing some fucking crazy song. I think I probably even played Dirty Streets, but she seemed a little freaked out. But most of them, they really handled it well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a lot of Cuban guys. Yeah, we have a massive Cuban population here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys, mainly guys, they speak pretty good English already. And so we'll talk about the music. And I know a little Spanglish along the way.
Okay.
And I'll set it up, you know, a certain song. And I play Pressure and Time by Rival Sons.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the most of anything, because it has a certain groove and a certain soulfulness and a certain move to it that other people that really don't even know anything about rock and roll. I mean, nothing. Meaning they'll say, hey, what kind of music you listen to?
Says everything.
I listen to a little everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I go, oh God. Okay.
Here we go. Yeah, here we go.
And then, you know, and then go into it. And I go, well, you know, you heard rock and roll? I literally say that sometimes. And they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, okay. I'm going to play some rock and roll that you've never heard in your life.
Yeah, not the Imagine Dragons. That's not rock and roll.
This shit on the radio.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do it, and people, like, literally will start rocking with me. Mm-hmm. And other times, they're like, they'll sit there, and I'll go, hey, what do you think? Like, yeah. And they'll take pictures of the songs on their phone, or if I'd hijack their phone, they'll save it if their phone's connected to the, you know, aux cord or something. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm crazy like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like you said, well, I think, look, like you say, I mean, most people, like you were basically doing in those Uber rides, is they like to be fed music, right? They're not like, you know, a lot of people aren't sitting there like we are, going through, you know, different bands left and right, trying to find that new band or that new song, that new riff that really just grabs you. They need a force fed. But another big thing is that, you know, rock in general, I mean, especially American society, it just hasn't been part of our culture now in quite some time, really since, I think, the 90s, late 90s, where, you know, maybe even before that. But it used to be, I mean, it was everywhere, right? It was on MTV. It was on the radio. People, I mean, it was part of our culture. Hasn't 90s, been for a long time now, you know, not
you're
much.
You're right. You've hit the nail right on the head. The 90s were really the last great generation of rock. And of course, this is coming from a Gen X dude that, you know, mm-hmm. got to live in probably the most prime spot of Gen X. You're going to mm-hmm. high school from 83 to 87 and literally watching metal awesome. Go from obscure to quickly, top of the charts with Def mm-hmm. Leppard, Quiet Riot, to, you know, bands like Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Dio, Van Halen briefly for a little long. And they were just at this peak game. Rat, Bon Jovi opened for Rat, for God's sake. I saw that. Mm-hmm. And then they blew up, you know, and it was just, you know, but it got run by the big labels again. It's the same story. They want to grow the audience. They want to expand the audience. And what that means, metalheads and rockers, is we got to make a pussy song. That's what it is.
The ballad, right?
Make a song that's really melodic and it's trying to get more women listeners to pay attention.
Yeah.
And they did videos. These dudes had more makeup than half the listeners.
Yeah.
The girls.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a big turnoff for a guy who graduated in 87 high school and then go to college. And I knew there was a rite of passage. When you get to college, particularly back then, there was this college rock scene that grew into alt rock,
mm-hmm.
which was blew up.
Sure. I mean,
MTV took it, did 120 minutes.
Well, like REM and bands like
120 minutes and something. Mm-hmm. All guys are cool. I mean, it was just amazing. And it became cliche. All the hair metal shit, you know, and for guys like me, I didn't want to hear Slaughter and Warren and Trickster. No, 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 no. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, fucking grunge killed it. I'm like, you're fucking sick.
It killed itself, right? Because, it, like you said, it was watered down. No one cared about it anymore. It had its place in the 80s, you know, in a certain part of it, you know, up until about 88 or so. And then grunge came over, and then, you know, heavy rock really, really kicked its ass for, you know, for a while. But like we've said,
there was metal coming out still.
Oh, yeah.
Metallica was blowing up.
Pantera.
Pantera came about.
Absolutely.
I mean, but metal got a bit heavier.
Well, slow. It got slowed down. It went mid-tempo. You know, it went mid-tempo.
To more people, you know, and then Megadeth and Slayer, obviously, and Anthrax killed it for years and years.
Yeah.
But grunge gave you a rock edge, and it was closer to the legacy sound of the 70s.
Yeah.
It was bare bones. Here's rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this, the chorus, some good, and they were like, fuck no, no more guitar solos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that, and yeah, that was gluttonous and getting old. My buddy Matt, Mike Varney would kill me probably.
I know, right?
Shredder, bro. You know, he was like the shredder metal.
Shrapnel. Oh, he was. First metal label, independent label ever. You know, yeah.
Shrapnel. Yeah. Yeah. And, but I just, it just lost its, I mean, I still listen to Metallica. I listened to Dio even.
Oh, yeah.
And Maiden after, when I got into college, there were some bands I didn't leave. I mean, Judas Priest, they did the Turbo thing. I was like, what the living fuck is going on? And I was one of, you know, 500,000 Judas Priest fans going, no! Keyboards, what is this? But they gained 2 million in fans the other way.
They did, so, you know.
You know, and then chicks knew who they were. And, you know, it was played at strip clubs for the rest of the entity of that song, probably.
Sure. Well, you know, back then,
well,
too, a lot of
sugar on me.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff was formulaic, too. You know, a lot of those, you had Atlantic, like you mentioned, you had Rat and Winger. They were all produced by the same guy, Bo Hill. I mean, it was a very formulaic thing where they just, you know, because look, it, one of those things, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And there was a model that they use. And that's the thing that's really been, that's killed rock too. Is, you know, really since the you know, the internet took over when Napster came out. I mean, the business model in the major label industry has been broken for almost 30 years. And they don't, that's why you're seeing a lack of bands, right? Everything now is just solo artists, whether it's rap or, you know, EDM or the band itself, they don't care.
Those are easy to control. Dude.
Control, exactly. That was what I was going to say.
People who have
exactly.
a lot of money that are, in, yeah. you know, to help grow these things and everything else.
The control.
It's easier to work with a solo individual
exactly.
artist
exactly.
than four or five guys that play different instruments and party or whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, Matt, so obviously you know a lot about the scene. Probably wouldn't be doing a show with you. And tell me, where were you when you first got involved with the scene to a certain level?
Well, you know, the real thing, like you were just saying before, right? For a lot of people don't know that there's these bands in the scene out there. This was probably about the late 2000s, around 2000 and maybe 8 or so. I remember seeing, I just used to go into the record store, and I was a documentary buff, and I just would buy any rock or metal documentaries, and I happened to pick up the documentary Such Hawks, Such Hounds, right? The infamous documentary that focused on the American hard rock scene. And some of those bands I was obviously privy to, Atomic Bitchwax and so forth from the 90s and Orange Goblin. But I was not, some of them, like this band here, Earthless, and I'm trying to think of some others, you know, Dead Meadow or, you know, those bands.
Rhino was in that movie,
yes, he
I
was.
Believe.
Yep, yes, he was. It was a great movie. And
he's
I discovered
got a documentary
this
coming out.
I heard, yeah, I saw that. He's got one coming out. Yeah, that should be awesome. I can't wait to see that. But yeah, man, that's when I realized, like, whoa, what is all this stuff? And then I just started looking really deeply into it, man. And then, you know, right around, the late 2000s, it just was like, whoa, I didn't know how much was out there globally. That was what I think shocked me more than anything, is how much of a global scene that there is. Not so much a domestic here in the United States, the global scene there is. And so I realized, wow, there's so much of this shit out there. And then I just got, you know, just face first into all of it, you know. And so since then,
where were you? Been, like, where were you living?
I was living in Los Angeles. Well, I was living in Los Angeles. Okay. I was actually running too. I was running I had a record label I ran called No Joke Records from about 2005 to 2008. Mostly a metal label, and some thrash and hardcore metal stuff. I was really into metal, but I was getting out of that. I was getting, you know, the hardcore stuff was just more. Look, I love it as a youth, but you know, I was getting older, and it just wasn't resonating with me anymore.
You're a New York City boy.
Well, yes, born and raised in New York City. I've been living out in California
hardcore.
Now for of course, I grew up with hardcore there. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was in LA where I really, and then when I moved up here to the Bay Area, which is where I live now, we're outside of Oakland. Obviously, you know, the scene here when I moved here was really big. Now having some problems because all the venues are closing. There's still, you know, still some great bands, of course, but the scene hasn't been, you know, grown as much because a lot of venues are starting to kind of closed down left and right here because it's just crazy here. As you know, yeah. You could talk also a little bit. You know, you do another show called The Guest List that you where you focus on basically just promoting new music in general, all new music. You know, and that's what our heavy focus here is obviously new music. You know, that's a major focus.
Yeah, I started that show just by the simple standpoint is that I want to help music and get it out there. Doom and Stone has not been doing as many shows. And I felt that, wow, there's just so much good music going on. I'd heard about the Anchor platform, which is only on Spotify. And I know that's a problem. And I'll figure out the other stuff. But it's just like 1 hour a week. Mm-hmm. Boom. And it's not a whole lot of me talking. I probably talked more on this last episode than the previous one. But it's just getting music out there. But, you know, not really going into the in-depth stuff, as I'm not going to sit there and talk with myself for that long.
Sure. I know what you mean.
So with you and me, we get to really go in-depth on a lot of what's happening nowadays, what tours are coming up, festivals that are big. I mean, rock and roll and heavy underground festivals and all that. America is – we've always had a good amount of them, but – some pretty damn good ones
now,
all in the same year.
Oh, yeah.
Without Psycho, even, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Psycho disappears on us as really being the bar set. I mean, they quickly took things. And, you know, they maybe got too big for their own britches.
Could be
part of the problem. They had to expand the audience.
I'll just give you a great example. I did an interview for Aftershocks with Brian Slagle, obviously the CEO of Metal Blade. And he was saying, going in the 90s, when there was that trying period we had, when metal was just not a big thing, obviously, he had to obviously adjust pretty, a lot, to keep the label going. Like he had said, he could have sold his label. He had offers. I mean, they signed the Goo Goo Dolls back then. You know, remember that? Metal Blade had actually the Goo Goo Dolls originally.
Yeah.
And so forth. And every single time these majors bought off, a independent, that thing was dead and gone within a few years. So he just refused to do it because he wanted to keep it going.
A boutique brand, branch. It's crazy. I watch, I don't pretend to know the music business. So when it comes to some of this stuff. Okay. And all I can use my common sense and my business background to kind of sniff out some of this stuff along the way and do my research. You got to do fucking research to kind of really look at what these labels are doing. And obviously we're not privy to, ad budgets and things like that. I mean, how much money are they putting behind a band? If you look, there was a great, you mentioned documentaries, what was it called? Underground Rock Incorporated, or
oh, is that like the one I was telling you about? Underground Inc. Yes, Sean Katz from Australia. Yes.
So I watched it. All right.
Yeah.
And as a guy who '90s were for me musically, it was super kick ass. I mean, there was rock and roll stuff. I mean, even the fucking Gin Blossoms and what was the band you just said? Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah.
Even they had good rock songs. I mean, they wrote songs that like stuck in your head. Sweet, Toad the Wet Sprocket, and the Toadies, and obviously bands like Helmet and Tool and so on. So it's the 90s are such like kindred spirits in a weird way for me with the 70s. And it's not necessarily the sound, it's just the legacy of what they're still trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
and maybe not accenting as much on musicianship always, but still carrying that thread of energy and rebelliousness and edge to it. And lyrics that, you know, was easy to remember. I mean, hell, you know, it's part of what, you know, sometimes you hear a song and it reminds you of things.
Oh, you know? Absolutely.
I hear the song Thank You by Led Zeppelin. It brings a tear to mind. Tears my eyes half the time. It's insane. The first time I ever heard it, I was on mushrooms. So I'm not sure if that helped.
Well, I mean, you should remember if you're on mushrooms. Yeah. You know, nothing ever goes away when you're on mushrooms, you know. But
I listen to it too much. Was that Matt? Yeah. When you were a junior and senior in high school,
okay,
what were your three of your favorite bands?
Well, that was really probably because, you know, I'm 47, so I graduated high school in 93. So, you know, I'm about six, seven years younger than you are. And so that was right at the height of the grunge, you know. I mean, obviously, right. 93, right? So, obviously, you know.
Grunge was kicking in 91.
91-ish, yeah.
Soundgarden were already going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now I'll give you an example. So for instance, this is one album I think I recommended it to you and you hit a song, but there was this band, for instance, called, cause I was so deep into the alternative metal stuff big time. And there was this band I loved they were actually out of Lawrence, Kansas, called Stick. They had two records, but only one was, they were on Arista. They got signed by a major. And because the majors were trying to find the new Seattle at that point, you know, they just thought they struck gold with Seattle. Obviously they know things are going to peak. Everyone was moving to Seattle. You know how it is. Once things go mainstream, it kind of gets destroyed. It doesn't last too long after that. So they were looking for different places around the country. And then majors went to this place in Lawrence, Kansas, College Town, University of Kansas is out of there. They got
the other man, Paul.
Paul, I was just going to say there was Paul out of there. Yep. Kansas as well. Yeah. So them and Stick were they were the two bands. Yeah. That got signed. And, you know, so yeah, I was in a Stick. That was one of my favorite records. I was into metal really at that time too, you know, growing up in New York. Like I said, I was listening to some of the hardcore stuff, band like Biohazard. I really liked, you know, they were a big band back then, you know? And of course I grew up in New York City around a lot of the rap and urban stuff. I don't listen really to that stuff anymore. But of course, as a kid, I listened to some of that stuff. But mostly, I was into like Alice in Chains. You know, I was into Pantera. You know, I was into Prong. Prong was another one. I was into White Zombie, Helmet. Huge Helmet fan.
Yeah, Helmet, Quicksand. Yeah.
Quicksand, another
York
one.
New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Good. Yeah, great. I fans. Loved both those bands.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Still new.
Yeah.
No. Like the new Quicksand is really good.
Oh, it's really good.
I saw them live over at it was Hard Rock, but now it's Virgin. And it was in their smaller venue and caught them. And it was a great, 10-song set. And I had already pre-gamed a lot with the newer album. And it's really good. It was like a Missile Command.
Oh, wow. Wow. Missile Command.
Think about that. Flashback. Wow.
For that's a flashback.
Many of us. That video game. Where
Atari. Oh, yeah.
Well, it was in the arcade.
Oh, the one in arcade, you say. Okay.
So when I was a little kid, Missile Command was kind of one of the early on video games.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool because you would go to, you would have places to shoot from the middle, right and left. And you had all the shits flying down. They're trying to bomb your fucking city or whatever. Nothing's changed, by the way.
I know, right?
This minute.
Yeah. Jesus. No. Yeah, no, absolutely, man.
Yeah, that's really cool that you, you went to high school in New York.
So I was at the high school in New York, you know. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was cool too, music scene wise. I mean, was in New York, was, I don't even remember hearing about that CMJ music festival that they used to have back then at all. So they basically just every venue, you know, in New York usually it was like a week or two, almost every night they'd have these showcases from whether the labels or management companies or what have you.
Wow.
And they would put on showcases with these bands, and CMJ was just a big, huge festival. If you got your CMJ pass, you could basically go to any show you wanted all, you know, whatever it was, basically all week, you know, it was like $100 and you can go to whatever show you wanted to for the whole week. So
South by Southwest,
it was kind of like that. It was like the old South by Southwest. Exactly. Very similar. And, so yeah, I mean, that was, like you said, 90s were definitely a great time. And like we were saying, you know, there's a lot of these bands now from the 90s reforming. I know there's a band that you've been pushing a lot on your shows, which is Sugar Tooth. I mean, that was a band I never thought I'd hear again. Obviously, I featured Joey Castillo from Queens of the Stone Age fame. And man, dude, that I, you know, that new song, I'm really liking it. I'm glad to see these bands back. Like you said, the Toadies are back out there, bands like that. You know,
but just, I mean, Sugar Tooth was on that documentary we were just talking about.
Yes, they were, exactly.
And on there, they were quite prevalent as part of the storyline and the kind of telling what happens. And when they got bigger and they went and did this second album and they got all crazy and decided the Dust Brothers should and Castillo had taken off the Queen's Stone Age, I think by then, probably take over duties from Alfredo Hernandez. And they did that second album. They did some touring. They got some promo and then everything got pulled.
Everything.
And that's the brutality of a heavy, a larger label, how quickly they will discard it because there is only a certain amount of dollars. But back then, I mean, literally, I mean, there is always going to be that budget. There's only a certain amount of dollars you can spend, you know, as a guy who used to manage departments that would like create $100 million a year and all this other $50 million. There's budgets, there's amounts you can spend, and you know, you got to make decisions. And it's a brutal story when you hear of stuff getting shelved, which is the worst thing. Like, literally, you created the album and they just put it on shelf, never completely put out,
never do much with
it. Nita kind of has that situation,
And, oh, that's a good point.
Sugar Dude, they just basically got pulled, and that was it. The album was not taking off to what they thought it should. And so you never know the full what that second album could have done if it had continued to got the support from the label. And what I mean by that is the label works with these large management companies, right, that are managing, you know, certain artists or bands and so on. And then, of course, you have the business of the between the label and then the radio station producers. Nowadays, there's one or two of the main companies. They're like literally down to like four programmers, like either in regions, each country, in each part of the country. And they come up with the shit. So basically the DJs don't even get much free reign. And so it's just the same stuff. And if you look at it, the pattern, you know, majority of it comes from the same basic labels.
Of course, it's what boy pay for, you know,
bands that are highly represented in different management companies.
And well,
is we know people, we'll take the risk of working with you. We're going to take a big cut of it and we'll get you connected with the right people to give you the best chance to be successful.
Absolutely. You know, no, and you're right. I mean, management companies, law, you know, attorneys, these are the ones running the industry now. You know, I mean, like they always said, there's three, four people that control the whole music industry. Well, you know, there's not many people. If you know,
there's a number of, you know, board of chairmen.
Yeah, well, and they're the ones that.
But you know, in the end, it's seriously comes down to three big, massive labels,
like conglomerates.
Atlantic Records is not an independent label anymore. They're like under Sony or something.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah,
and it just goes on and on. All these ones we remember, and when you have more options, it usually is a better situation.
Yeah,
more competitiveness, higher quality product. So when you have these like almost monopoly kind of situations where money rules all, and it's fucked us up in so many ways possible. And in rock and roll, I mean, everything is all in. And on hip hop and rap, period. In a sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Just turn on the fucking TV and look, and listen to the radio, and go look at every single possible. And country has shifted in and moved a little bit more rocky.
Yep,
they hijacked a little part of rock.
I agree.
You know, and so they're able to grab a certain part of the demographic that just is not going to buy into the whole hip hop and rap thing. I'm one of them. I'm not in any of that.
I'm not either.
I'm Gen X. And I knew and listened to rap some in high school and college with Beats Boys, Run DMC.
Yep.
You know, a few others, like Public Enemy and NWA were when I was in college, you know?
Sure.
But, it's not for everyone. And rock and roll may not be for everyone, but not everyone knows that there's this rock and roll.
True. That's
the conundrum.
Well, even the thing with that, if you look at and I don't like to call it hip-hop, I always call it rap. You know, it was rap music. It wasn't hip-hop. And if you look at what they were, because my thing about why I liked rap, you know, in that time period, whether it was late 80s or early 90s, it was, if you listen to it, for one, they were bands, right? There was multiple rappers in it, so it was a band. And secondly, was the music, the background, you know, the music that was in it. These guys were taking their parents, whether it was rock records, blues records, soul, jazz, funk, and that's how they were. That's where the music was coming from in the songs
early on.
Yeah, well, now there hasn't been to me since the mid to late 90s. It's just been all beats.
Well, you know, get this, man.
It's not samples from old records like they used to
be. Get this. Well, yeah, because what's his face, Rick Rubin? I saw him in an interview not that long ago where he's basically taking credit for telling rap groups to not bother with people playing instruments and going to that more of the sample side of things. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of helped transition things. I mean, he was a New York City guy going to NYU and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rick Rubin's done a lot of cool things. He's very, very odd. Honestly, I've watched with a bunch of stuff. I watched him with Joe Rogan. Yes, I check out Joe Rogan, so I admit it. I don't give a fuck, you know? Mm-hmm, and a few things struck me a little shady and weird, you know? But Rubin has done so well doing what he's doing. Rick Rubin being him, like the music whisperer, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's fascinating when he talks about the whole thing where, you know, he was talking to, it was whatever first or second bands that doing rappers that he'd signed. And he was like, you don't need, you know, like real music. Mm-hmm. There's these other things we can do.
Yeah.
And just really was able to get it in front of the right audiences and
sure.
The rest is history, you know?
Yeah. No, it was. And that was like you said. And just bringing up what you said before, real quick, about the 90s now, you were talking about, you know, records being shelved. You know, like a great example, if we're talking heavy rock, you know, one of my favorite bands from the 90s in heavy rock, Stoner Rock, was Karma to Burn. Loved that band, that first record they put out. You know, I was interning actually at Roadrunner Records right after that record came out. And I remember I was so into that record. And when I went there, I mean, that was the first thing I asked people, you know, some of the people working. It was like, so what's going on with them? And I'm like, oh, we dropped them. And I'm like, what? Like, that was just a phenomenal record. And they're like, well, you know, they wouldn't get a great example too. They wouldn't get a singer, but it wasn't even just that. It was, you know, the band had drug problems. You know, it was a bunch of stuff. You know what I mean? But and basically what it was is they hired a singer. I think he played probably like four shows with them. And, you know, it was just a friend. And then they dropped him and they just said, screw this, we're just going to play on our own. And of course, Roadrunner was like, this wasn't part of the deal. You guys,
they don't want an instrumental band.
No, but now the thing is another band. There's this band called Both Worlds, you know, that was on there too. I don't know if you remember who they were. They were an alternative, like, you know, metal band, rock band. They were guys that were from hardcore bands. So the singer was the singer, old singer from the Cro-Mags, and it was a bunch of these guys. And it was a good album. And I talked to the guy, John Joseph was his name, a guy who's been on Joe Rogan. So there you go, that tie in. And he was basically saying that. The reason why it got shelved, because I was there and they were pumping the shit out of that record. They were trying to get it on radio left and right. And then I guess it just wasn't, you know, there was so much, they wasn't doing well, like too well, I guess, on radio. So they just told the band, look, the tour you're about to go on, we're going to pull you from it. We're not giving you any support. You can still go on, but you got to pay your own way. You got to live in, you know, you got to sleep in people's houses. There's no hotel rooms or something.
Oh,
so they were like, look, we're not doing that. Screw you guys. And so they just dropped them because they refused to do it. Is. Yeah, it just, you know what it was? There was so much money in the 90s, too, in the industry that they were throwing around because they were charging $20 a CD and everyone was buying a CD for 20 bucks with one or two good songs on it, and they were just doing it. I remember doing that. I would take chances on albums because there was no internet. Right? We couldn't hear it, you know?
Ooh, oh, yeah, that's what it was. Inflation and taxes up there in New York.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I didn't have to pay that.
All right. Well, you're lucky. Yeah, you're lucky. I was paying
12. Yeah, I bought a bunch of CDs when I lived in North Carolina.
Okay. Oh, that's a little cheaper.
In South Carolina, yeah. But it was still still like $14.50, which was surprising because we were buying albums for like $8.99 or something, you know.
Wow.
And tapes were about the same.
Tapes are still going there. CDs were definitely
a bump up cost-wise.
Yeah.
But, man, that's a big bummer hearing about that kind of shit. All that work that band does.
Well, and like you said, that you know, if anyone out there, check out Underground Inc. Like you said, it's a great documentary. As you see, they just signed up so many bands that they didn't hit within, like, you know, the first record. You know, there was no more artist development. You know, that's what's going on now, too. Without labels, when you don't sign people to 3-album deals and they don't have time to develop, there's no artist development anymore now. Right now, you've got to have your own fan base. You know, you already have to have it if you want to get signed and have people like, you know, and people that, you know, get behind you, you know, in on those labels. We're just in a different world right now. But you know what? And like we're trying to talk about here, there's so much good music. There is a rebirth of this, you know, heavy rock scene. And look, a lot of it is run by a lot of older guys like ourselves. It is, you know, whether you're doing your shows or guys putting out labels still doing it. Like I said, I was talking to Brian Segel about that. He's like, look, people are still around. You know, these old guys who've been running it are still doing it. And so everybody hasn't given a lot to these younger, you know, these younger guys. It doesn't really give them maybe a chance to kind of sneak in there with their little label to do what a lot of those older labels used to do. Right. But the bottom line is there is so much. We've got all these great labels. I mean, you obviously, I mean, you could talk about you doing your curating for one of the best labels out there. As we know, Ripple Music, you're based out here in the Bay Area. You've been, you know, curating records for them and helping them, you know, with their A&R, because obviously like we said, there's no A&R departments at labels anymore, you know? So, why don't you just talk a little bit about, you know, what you do for Ripple and, you know, you're seeing in terms of, you know, go into it.
Todd's been super cool and has collaborated with me on a number of things. And I brought him, three different bands, and then I put together three splits for his split series. And so, you know, started off with two from Spain, one of which played at Planet Desert Rock 2, where I brought them over from, they came over from Barcelona. And so it was Saturna and Electric Monolith. And then the next one was two Australian bands, with Planet of the Apes and Dune Eater. I knew that these were just two really good bands. And I didn't even know they really knew each other that well, which they did. And I just knew they had good songs. They had albums I would go back to. Mm. You know, that I was like, there's good music. What the fuck's going on? Mm. And so that all worked out. And then the last one was a Scandinavian one. It was Kaiser, who played Planet Desert Rock.
Great band.
And Captain Caravan, who played Planet Desert Rock.
Yeah.
Nice. Kaiser from Finland and Captain Caravan from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think Captain Caravan like stepped up in like a whole different heavy rock direction, a little more straightforward, a little less doomy.
Mm.
And Kaiser just brings it. I mean, O2 is just an amazingly crazy, wacky, inventive musician.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
He just put out, if Metallica did Eye of the Tiger, go check that on YouTube. It's brand new.
Really?
Metallica doing Eye of the Tiger.
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay. He doesn't even bother. He's trying to play the bass, and then he just gives up.
Nice.
The bass part's coming. And then Tidal Wave, which I helped put out, brought to the label. They just landed number one in January for Doom Charts.
Doom Charts, yeah.
So by a large margin, from what I understand. Last year, I put out Jeremy Iron and the Rat Gang Malibu's. For Sweden, they were formerly on Small Stone, and they put together, you know, one of the darkest, really COVID era vibe albums. Like, it really is emotional and epic and all that sound. Mm-hmm. And Jerm has always had that to some degree, and that's J-I-R-M.
Yeah.
And then coming up here soon will be Wolfknot, coming over from Norway as well. Love their last album. I introduced them to Todd. Todd said, this is good. And I said, cool. Set up an email, and they've been buddies ever since.
That's awesome.
So I'm excited, you know. And
yeah,
I've shifted, and I help out in the background, we'll say, on quite a few things. I've worked with bands on promotions, running ads, things like that. Tour support, help them out with doing ads for shows. So at least people know a little bit before they come in town because not many people know them. So you got to make an effort. You know what I mean? You can't just expect people to show up at a show. Because I ran shows and it doesn't happen
that way. Absolutely.
Doesn't matter what city.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know, and one of the things, I think one of the goals that we've talked about for the show is really just to bring together this heavy rock community that's across the globe. Like we were just saying, the Doom Charts, right? We're both contributors to Doom Charts. And, you know, that's such an important and a great, I mean, obviously you guys on the Doom and Stone show, obviously that focus super, super heavily on the Doom Charts. And it's just such a great, you know, for people who don't know the Doom Charts, I mean, go check it out, you know, because that's where you're going to find your heavy rock, underground heavy rock bands. You want to find some new up-and-coming band globally. Like we said, you just mentioned, list off all these bands coming from Scandinavia, you know, Norway, Sweden. I mean, it's just bleeding to Australia. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we could go. I mean,
heavy rock is a world thing.
It is.
And Matt, I had to get over something in my head. When I switched out of FM radio, I was so fed up. I was like I went kind of not away from rock for a while. I just wasn't championing it as much in the 2000s because I had like a crazy job and living in Orlando, like crazy, like lots of responsibilities, lots of money. And I was doing a lot of party drugs. and the party drug scene was in the nightclubs and in the lounges. Mm. And I live in Orlando, Florida, where it was absolutely beautiful women as part of this whole scene. And I'm sorry, but I listen to mindless, you know, house music. But in certain backgrounds and scenarios, it was pretty badass. And of course, it's always better when you're on ecstasy. And you know, in a beautiful girl in a small black dress. You know, it's just it's insane that. But that era just was not. You know, it's been rough since.
It was
then,
a rough era.
Music out there, and America, you know, was not producing as much as we would always hope. And when I started exploring and I found like these other things, next you know, I'm like, why do I give a shit if they're from America? Why do I not think, why am I looking down upon anything made anywhere else? Like, true. Literally, because I'm like, I already like Iron Maiden and Judas Priest. Why can't there be other good bands? Because the majority of our radio music does seem to be from the United States, or has been over the years. And I think that's in itself confining when you have these bands that should probably be played on the radio everywhere in the world.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, a band like Greenleaf, why? I mean, they may not sound like a radio band, but probably a lot of people would like them if you played them. Sasquatch, I'm sure millions of people would like them if someone did something. You know,
well, you know what it is. I think the problem is, like, I'll just, you know, I mean, I know people like that. I could put on, you know, they love, say, Queens of the Stone Age and, you know, specific bands that were radio friendly. But yeah, you put on, you know, I know people, they love Queens of the Stone Age. You know, you play some Kaius for them. Oh, no. Yeah, I don't like this stuff. I mean,
people come in at different entry points, Matt.
Well, that is true.
And that's the weird part, right?
That's a good point. Yep.
Mm-hmm. What was your entry point, Kaius or Queens?
It was Kaius, you know, I'll be honest with you, even Queens, you know, Queens, I didn't really, it didn't grab me at first. It took me a little while to get into Queens, to be honest with you. It didn't really, I thought it was a little too poppy at first, a little too repetitive. I did see them live, which helped, you know, I thought they were fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, obviously now I'm a big fan, but yeah, it did. It took me a second or two to get into, you know, I mean, I would say probably the same with Kaius, because when Kaius came out in the early 90s, you know, I was really, I mean, even though I was into heavy rock and stuff, I, you know, they were just so different, you know, with Josh's guitar coming through a bass amp, you know, and John Garcia's voice and just a desert thing. It was so unique and different, that same thing. I was more into the crunchy metallic riffs. And then it took, you know, took me a second or two to really, you know, get accustomed to that. And you're right, though. That is a good point, though. A lot of times it's just different entry points. Things, you know, whatever you're into at that point, you might not really get into it maybe until later on. So that's another a good four. What's up,
Matt? Let's do this. Let's take a break and let's play them the first Sugar Tooth release.
Okay. What do you do? Like Sold My Fortune?
Yeah. No, the new release.
Oh, the new release. Okay. All right. Hey, well, let's do it. We'll be right back. Sugar Tooth, I've Been What You Become, the new song from God. I just can't believe that those guys are back. I never thought I'd see a band like that come back. A lot of those late, you know, 90s, mid to late 90s rock bands, heavy rock bands, you know. I mean, it's, yeah, you know, it's just great. Like I said, some of these bands that have come back and played, I'm just so shocked that they have, because, you know, I mean, you know what it is. They might have had one, like Sugar Tooth had one song really back then, and they really weren't a huge band. They had that Sold My Fortune song. It was all over Beavis and Butthead and everything. And but here they are with a new record, and you know, it's great. And I guess that once again, it's definitely, of course, helped us want to start this show. And the other thing too about this show, it's a little different. Obviously, you know, I like I said, that's going to be different from something like what you do, say, with Doom and Stone. Is obviously we're doing video. We're going to be playing videos, music videos. We're going to obviously be doing interviews with bands, old and new. And the other thing, like we said, bringing the community together.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. It's good to have. It's good to just try to build this community and just continue and pay tribute to the people that helped build it before you and me were even involved with it.
Absolutely. So, yep.
You know, there's ego and there's this, you know, there people are weird nowadays. And so, you know, I'm never here to offend anyone, but it's going to happen probably. But and some people are, you know, a little soft and they get weird when people are trying, you know, and we'll try not to over promote it, but we got to get it out there at the same time. And gosh, folks, stay tuned, because we're going to have some cool stuff.
We're going to have a lot of cool stuff. We're really excited about this, man. I'm super excited. And I know, you know, obviously this is just a little intro episode here. We're just kind of giving everyone an idea of what we're going to be doing. You heard us talking about some music industry talk too. We're going to do that. Obviously this is a little bit of a free form thing we did right now just to shoot the shit and kind of get this thing kicked off. But yeah, man, I'm excited. You know, I hope everyone else out there is the Heavy Galaxy Show. It's on the CMS Podcast Network, cmspn.com, or CMS Network at cmsnetwork.com. And of course, you know, John, I mean, why don't you go and fill everyone in on what you got going on too with anything? I know
the Vegas Rock Revolution. There's a 420 show I'm pretty sure is going to happen here in Vegas. It's the Thursday night. Okay. Really trying to align with a cannabis dispensary. I mean, it kind of just makes sense. So the first one I tried, which is really close to the venue, hasn't responded yet. So, you know, just trying to get a synergy, because the cannabis industry's kind of been hijacked, particularly over here by hip hop and rap again. I'm like, what happened? Do people understand rock and roll and smoking pot have gone hand in hand for a very long time, longer than there's even been rap, for God's sake. So what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so hopefully we can get one of them involved. I already got a beer that'll be involved as well.
Okay.
Hopefully I'll be able to make the announcement soon. It'll be kind of a metal night of sorts.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, 420 metal, you know, we'll call it. And anyways, but other than that, guys, I'm going to be truthful. I am not doing a lot of shows anymore, concerts, because it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It's a much of a money pit.
The bands or their management that's booking the stuff, sometimes they can just get money, better money going and playing somewhere else.
Gotcha. Okay.
There's only so much to kind of a lot that you're willing to risk. And when you know that when you're trying to draw upon, quote unquote, just to begin with, stoner rock fans, there's not, it's been a growth that I've had to try to corral in for 5-6 years. And it's not that big. I brought in new people, but, you know, a lot of the fans, they don't even go to shows. So that's kind of a bummer. Like people that like go, oh, I got a psycho and I like this band, and they like the front running top stoner bands in Doom. You know what I mean? By front runner, like Elders coming in town, they're going to that.
Sure. Going to that, yeah.
But they may not support these other really good bands, but they don't have, you know, 20,000 followers. So that kind of, there's even an elitism kind of weird thing. They're just not going to bother with it at times. And, you know, weekday shows are a bear. Definitely a tough one. But I'm good on Thursdays for years. I brought in 100 people on a Thursday, like probably 2 dozen times, I mean, at least a dozen times. So hopefully this will be a good one. It just, I'm taking a risk. The venue's taking a risk. Everyone's taking a risk, you know, You know, if people mm-hmm. come out and support, you know, and I put ads behind it. Like, I spend money. I gamble on each show by mm-hmm. actually trying smartly, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe too much. So anyways, other than that, man, and then right behind me, Matt.
Oh, yeah. Heavy Sight Sounds Fest.
Sounds Fest in Night. Joshua Tree. Mm-hmm. Mario Lally is the one throwing this party. Mario Lally is like the godfather of the desert rock scene.
Oh, yeah.
Joshua Tree. You know, he's literally the guy who did the desert generator parties for Caius and whoever else. And it's 2 days. It's like the 25th, 26th, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also doing a Friday where it's kind of an unofficial or whatever. It's a pre-party. That's going to Freaks, which is Ruben Romano from Fu Manchu.
Oh, yeah.
It is part of that band. I know Ed Mundell.
Ed Mundell, yep.
I don't know if he's still in it or not. So
I think he is. You know, I interviewed Ruben back in August or September, and he was still, I believe Ed's still in the band.
We gotta get an update even from that time.
Okay. All right.
Let's go for that one.
Got it.
I think we should get it. I saw Freaks and Ed wasn't there. Put it that way.
All right, gotcha. Okay. So maybe.
So I don't know what's going on there. Whatever. But that's going to be a pretty cool night. And there's like the Dalai Lamas are playing.
Oh, wow.
What a name.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. See, man, you should be there. What the fuck, man?
Well, you know, dude. Hey, I remember I did go to a Vegas Rock Revolution show this year.
You did? Well, how about that?
How about it? And it was not one of the big ones. Spirit Mother, exactly. Yep.
See, you. So, you practice what you preach. Yeah, you hung out with Spirit Mother and who else we have on that crazy show?
Spirit Mother, and there was the two other something sisters or something.
Oh, Acid right? Sisters.
Acid Sisters, yeah. That's it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They're fun, man.
Yeah.
That old school kind of heavy psych and garagey at the same time kind of thing.
Yeah, man. That was a fun show. And that's the thing. Like you said, that was a Thursday night. There was you got a pretty, you know, I would say it was a pretty good crowd for a Thursday night show.
70, it was maybe 60 something paid and 70 total. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be better because there were, you know, there were female artists, which a lot of times will automatically track. And there were people who went to those shows I've never seen in my life.
Okay.
I mean, that happens a lot of my shows, actually. Mm-hmm. But there were people that were there because of the advertising of showing kind of a more, a different kind of thing. Because it was a different kind of rock show. It really was.
Yeah.
So I've delved in the psychedelic scene quite a bit. Because I'm a big fan of it. It's my number two. Like, heavy rock has a big umbrella, if you will. And psych rock is different trees from the traditional / retro to what I call the new wave of heavy psych, which is, you know, the Elder King Buffalo branch, Nolan Witches. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big, and then there's like Tammy Impala and all that on the rock.
Oh, wow, yeah.
The rock scene, which Tammy Impala is like a massive band now. And there's really a lighter set of rock, of psychedelic that's kind of cool too. I like it. And so,
yeah, it's along the lines of like an indie rock type of thing, you know? Yeah.
It is a little bit. And, you know, like, I love Black Angels. And they're like the epitome of that psychedelic rock, except they got enough guitars that it counts. Some of these other bands, they're thinning out that guitar even more and still making it a psychedelic because they're using more keyboardy and all that, which again, nothing's wrong in the psychedelic world. It's just guitar's got to be usually the king for me.
I agree with you. Yeah. I need a little crunch. You know, I like a little crunch. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be huge.
Or the textures that.
Some layered guitar.
And one of those cool bands like that, you know, but Earthless. Yeah. I mean, Isaiah Mitchell's in my opinion, the best guitarist, on the planet.
He's right.
And he can sing.
Too, man.
He can sing, man. Like Golden Boy is amazing music ever in the history. Like I'm going to continue to bother him from now until eternity. Man, and I messaged him and we messaged back and forth some. And I'm just going to keep telling him how beautiful it is. I am going to buy the rights to him if I can. Just that. You can throw like a whole concert, you know, with visuals everywhere and in a fucking cool room with the right stage. And man, people would just go fucking bonkers to their songs if you caught enough buzz or you ate enough shrooms. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You don't even need that once, to enjoy it.
You don't even need that. You don't. It helps. It helps.
That would make it even crazier.
You know? Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Great, man. Well, once again, the Heavy Galaxy Show, man. We can't wait to get this started. We've got some great guests coming up. We got some great things lined up. Like I said, this is just a sort of a kickoff, shooting a shit type episode just to introduce ourselves and what we're getting ready to do. And John, man, anything else you want to throw in here before we wrap this this episode up?
Nah, brother, I'm super excited. Everything's cool. I appreciate everything you're doing, Matt, and have done. And it's rad to be able to join forces with you. And just
likewise.
Cool stuff here. We got a lot of neat things happening.
It's going to be fun, man. We're going to be fun. And obviously, we'll be talking about the Heavy Psych Sound Fest. Like I said, you're going to Joshua Tree. I'll be up here going to the one in San Francisco. So we'll definitely be, I think, report on both our experiences. It's going to be fantastic. One of the future shows. But yeah, man, so everyone out there. And we're going to try to do this. Our goal is to do it biweekly. And hopefully, with time permitting, we'll be doing this as a weekly show. That's our goal. But for now, we're going to do it biweekly just to get things kicked off. And once again, everyone, just check us out on all the social media sites, Heavy Galaxy Show, CMSPN.com. We're on the CMS Network. You can go there. We're going to be all over the streaming platforms, the YouTubes, we're going to be everywhere. So just go ahead and check everything out and look forward to the next episode. And until then, we'll see everyone next time.